Fáilte. My name is Andrew Healy, and I'm a lover and drinker of Irish whiskey. I'm on a journey of discovery to learn as much as I can about the great spirit of the Emerald Isle. Along that journey, I'm lucky enough to meet other people who are passionate about Irish whiskey, and the My Favourite Irish podcast is their story and their favourite Irish whiskey. Whether that's their current favourite, their first ever dram, or one that has a special place in their life. On today's episode, I got to spend some time recently with Toby Nolan, an Irish-born commercial photographer who lives in Central Oregon. And we talked about Toby, his travels, my goodness, has he travelled, and of course, his favourite Irish whiskey, which is Redbreast. Listen along.
Fáilte Rash, we're normally sitting at a bar, but Toby, it's not a bar in here, is it?
It's not quite, no. It has its moments, but yeah, not usually.
So Toby Nolan, Irishman in Central Oregon, met you a number of years back when we were up here. Folks know that we love to travel here, and met you at a brewery.
Indeed, Deschutes Brewery, and I think we tried doing the math on it. We think it was probably, what, six?
Yeah.
Maybe 7 years ago. It's going back a little ways.
So yeah. I didn't realize at the time. I thought you were a beer guy, and I'm sure you are, but you're obviously a photographer.
That's it, yeah. So always been a beer guy. It's kind of in the DNA. Always been a whiskey guy, kind of in the DNA. But I've been working as a full-time photographer now for actually not long after we first met.
Okay.
That's when I kind of started transitioning into doing it part-time, trying to get a business going. And then started going full time with it. But first picked up a camera in school in Dublin. We had the old dark room and everything. That's where I kind of.
So you're old school on that front.
Old school, yeah. Even spent a very short amount of time in Sallynoggin at the little college there.
The tech, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. It didn't last long. There's a little bit of a creative differences between me and the person in charge. But yeah, always wanted to be a photographer. Never really followed it through until later in life, and here I am now.
Yeah, you're in your
living the dream
in a fantastic, fun studio space that you have here in Bend, and we'll talk about what got you here later. But you're a fellow Dub, born in Dunleary
area. Yep. So okay. Dunleary, Dalkey kind of areas.
Okay, yeah. So not too far from where I was raised.
Yep.
But you've travelled. Since a very early age.
I was born with itchy feet, for sure. So, yeah, family relocated from Dublin to Jersey, not New Jersey, old Jersey, when I was very young, just over a year old. And then I ended up moving back to Dublin at about the age of 12. I went to boarding school, finished up school, worked for about 18 months. Actually worked in Black Rock for a while.
Okay.
Right opposite your school there.
Where I went. Yeah.
I was working as a car salesman. First job out of school was.
Is that the Murphy and Gunn place down there at Toyota?
Yep.
Yeah.
Toyota Lexus, indeed. Yeah. Yep. And before that, I was in the BMW place just up the road there
as well.
So, but yeah, did that and then kind of decided to travel, and 3 month round trip to Cape Town turned into 2.5 years later, flying out of Nairobi, Kenya, having kind of hitchhiked my way all through southern eastern Africa. And then that took me from Nairobi to Toronto, Canada. Lived there for about a year.
There isn't a direct flight now between those two, is there? You probably have to go back via Heathrow.
I'm trying to remember which way I bounced around to get there, but it wasn't direct. Lived in Canada for a bit and then decided to go back to Dublin to, figure my life out and all the rest. And about 4 months later, I was on a plane to New Zealand. Supposed to go out there for about a year. That turned into 4.5 years. And then about a year of bouncing around traveling, and then ended up on the East Coast in Pennsylvania. Hacked about 6 months, didn't really love it there. So drove from Pennsylvania to Alaska, worked up there for a season, and then drove down to this area. And I've been here ever since, so coming up on 10 years now.
So have you ever mapped out all those miles?
I haven't. I really should sit down. I remember, I think it was actually potentially one of my parents that figured it out once. But yeah, by the age of 21, I'd been around the world 4 times.
That's so impressive.
I've probably done a couple more since then.
It's kind of in our Irish DNA, this leave. You know, you and I are We're a generation apart, but we were part of generations that, that left the country.
Yes.
And you've ended up here in a you know a wonderful part of the world. I live just south of here in a wonderful part of
not
the world.
Not too shabby down in Napa.
No, no, it's not. But you know, I've been lucky enough to travel. I feel privileged to have traveled through that time. And I was encouraged by my parents. You know, raised in Dublin, but would often go off traveling. And obviously, your parents raised you with that same kind of outlook.
Yep, we did family holidays and things growing up, and that's definitely what taught me that, you know, travel's exciting and interesting and worth doing. And I have very supportive and very patient parents.
it helps. Who,
there's definitely been moments over the years where they're like, you're not done yet. You don't want to maybe slow down for a little bit, but they've always seen that I'm happy, you know, seen that I'm providing for myself. I'm not, you know, asking for handouts.
The hand is out.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, I think they realize that I'm living my life the way that that works best for me. And I think they both, on some level, are living vicariously through me as well, because they weren't able to. They didn't have the same opportunities.
So. Well, and also the ease of travel nowadays. You know, you and I can, I'm not sure where you can go from here, but living where we do, down to San Francisco, and I'm back in Dublin in 11 hours.
Yep.
Whereas generations before us, once they left, it was a one-way ticket.
That's it, exactly.
Very much, and you know, same is true of the Italians, the Germans, etc. When that was it, once they left, they left. Whereas you and I go back.
Yeah.
I was just back, and I'm not sure when you're back next. But
I was just back in June.
Great.
Actually, yes, so not that long ago.
Probably your first trip in a couple of years.
That was the first, gosh, when did I go back before? I think it was 2019 I snuck in a quick trip before everything.
There was a little pandemic in between then and now.
A little hiccup along the way,
So you're here, folks know I love this part of the world, you're here. There isn't too many Irish folks here, I'm guessing.
No, we are few and far between. I have met not many that live here. Actually, you said one of the ways that you were able to locate me again was you saw my name in a magazine as a photo contributor.
Yeah, Ben Magazine.
And that same magazine, I got a random email one day through my work email, and it was an Irish woman living in Bend who said, I read your bio in Bend Magazine and realized you were Irish. Can we get together and have a drink? I haven't seen anyone from home in forever. And that was right before the pandemic. We haven't actually, I should pick that back up now and see where she's at. But yeah, there's very few of us around here.
Yeah, no, I'm going to guess that in places like Portland, there's probably a sizable Irish population.
There's definitely a little bit more, yeah.
The climate is just like Ireland. Pick a city in Ireland, and you know, it's wet.
Yep.
It's cold in the winter.
Yep.
And there's a great pub culture in Portland as well, which is something that we have back there. So I suppose we should keep chatting, but we should probably put something in our glass here.
I agree with you.
Now, so we should talk whiskey. So how did you come to whiskey? Was it in the family?
Yes, very much from my dad. My dad is a man of great taste. He loves whiskey. He loves wine. He's developed a bit of a passion for rum in more recent years as well, so he's been dabbling in that. But my dad was the one that introduced me to whiskey originally. Of course, Jameson was the very first whiskey that I ever had, and is still today. There's never not a bottle of Jameson at my house or my dad's.
Okay.
You know, every time we get together, that's our staple. So, yeah, he first introduced me to it. And, you know, it didn't take the way beer did originally for me. And a lot of that was just down to accessibility, cost, that sort of a thing. And also the people that you like to share it with. Not as many of my friends were whiskey drinkers. You know, everybody wanted beer. So, but as I got a little bit older and I started saying, well, maybe I don't need to share, you know, I can just have a little collection of bottles for myself. And it was actually a private collection was...
To you.
Thank you. A private collection went up for sale, and a friend of mine contacted me and said, hey, there's a bunch of Irish whiskeys here. You should come check it out. And that was the first time I found Redbreast 12. So believe it or not, the first time I found Redbreast 12 was in Central Oregon. I made it this far.
Sláinte.
Sláinte.
So, it's
old.
You say Jameson was kind of something you had as you were growing up. Mm-hmm. Redbreast 12 is what brought me back. It's my, I call it my gateway to this part of my life. Yeah. And I think you've alluded to something there, that when you're younger, you don't necessarily drink whiskey in a kind of a sipping sense, as yes. I would say. It's unfortunately kind of a shot
yeah.
thing. People go to the bar,
or
they order a shot of it, or
Coke or Red Bull or something yeah. like that.
I think, you know, from my journey, you've got to be at a certain age or stage in your life to actually mm-hmm. appreciate it. And, you know, the reality is a bottle of Red Breast or Green Spot or any yeah. of these wonderful whiskies, they're not necessarily cheap to buy to be drinking it every night. So.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. So what is it about this that you love?
So there's a few things about Red Breast. I'm a somewhat of a sentimental old fool. And once I tried it and realized I loved it, I was talking, of course, to my dad. First person I call, you know, send him a photo of all the bottles I got from that private collection and everything. And we're chatting back and forth. And it was actually my mom in the background. We were on a video chat. She said, Redbreast 12? I said, yeah. She goes, oh, that's the family whiskey right there. And
whiskey.
I course I had to call him out. I said, well, where's it been my whole life then? Because I don't remember getting offered it. But yeah, I guess, especially on my mother's side, Redbreast 12 has been, you know, the go-to for four generations now. So I like the fact that I sort of independently discovered it, and it's got this connection to my family already. But then also, it's just, I mean, it's a bland way to describe something, but it's just such a good drinking whiskey.
Yeah.
It's when I'm trying to convince friends of mine around here to try Irish, because people here like their bourbon, understandable. When you start talking whiskey, they might say, oh, I've tried a couple scotches, but I didn't really like it. And I'm like, well, what about Irish whiskey? No, I've never really tried it. And this is now, I used to start them on Jameson. This is now what I start people on. And I've converted.
That's a high bar, starting them on this.
Yeah. Well, I think I said it to you on the phone once. I like, if I can get them hooked on Redbreast 12, I know there's always a bottle at their house if I go over there as well. So it works in my favor, too.
Yeah, so we have your family to thank for mm-hmm. keeping the Redbreast lineage going, because it the brand almost died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the modern iteration that we see now is generally it's a mash bill, so that's the kind of the grain recipe, 50% malted, 50% unmalted barley.
Yeah.
In previous generations, there was slight differences to that. And also the distillation process. So they talk about it being oily and having a deeper spice character. Older Redbreasts.
Okay.
And older Redbreasts go for a pretty penny
when they
come to market. So I am sure there are old houses, country houses around Ireland where there's bottles of Redbreast knocking around in cellars or larders or whatever, and they're worth money nowadays.
Yeah.
So it's so obviously this is your go-to. How would you, we're here in your workspace, and mm-hmm. I'm hoping there isn't too much of this drunk here.
Not too much, but on occasion we'll celebrate the end of a big project or something.
Good, and you'll toast it with some Irish?
Exactly, yeah.
When you're at home sipping this, how do you sip your whiskey? Do you sip it like this?
So, Mike, 99% of the time, it'll be a couple of drops of water in okay. there. On a rare occasion, I might put a single large cube in there. But again, the longer I drink whiskey and the more I enjoy it, I tend to strip that back to, I'll start out with a sip neat, especially if it's something I haven't ever had before, I haven't had in a long time.
Yeah.
Just completely neat. And then I'll just add a couple of drops of water in there to open it up. And that's how I like to do it. I don't like to mess around with mixers, and I've had plenty of disagreements with girlfriends and things in the past when I come home and find one of my nice whiskeys with a chunk of Coca-Cola or something in them.
Because they haven't paid for it. You're the one who's paid for it. Because my philosophy is, if you've paid for it, you can drink it however you want.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Well, and my philosophy is, why would you add Coca-Cola to an $80 or $100 bottle of whiskey when there's a bottle of Bullet down there? Which Bullets, I don't mind, but I quite enjoy a bit of bourbon, but I don't know why you would choose a fine whiskey.
Especially when you think of the amount of crafting that's gone into it. Mm-hmm. Time, obviously, blended at the end, the time in barrel, the distillation and then gone all the way back to the farmer who grew the grains. Yeah. It's a long old process.
It is. So, and how can you truly appreciate something if you're masking the flavor? You know, I think you need to experience it in its raw form to start to learn how to appreciate whiskey.
I'd agree with you. It's part of my journey as well. It kind of going backwards. You know, 5-6 years ago would have had it over a big ice cube. But now we'll do that on occasion, but more so the sipping and, to your point, the water. And we do have some water here if we need to add a few drops in. So
Redbreast is one of the few that I find straight out of the bottle is just good to go. It's got that little bit of sweetness to it, which I think plays a part in why I've been able to get friends of mine in the U.S. to learn to appreciate is, I hate to compare apples and oranges, they're not the same thing, but some of the qualities of Redbreast, it's got that little spice to it, but it's got that sort of sweet finish as well. I think if somebody's used to drinking American bourbon, this is less of a shocking transition for them. You know, there's, to me, some crossovers between Redbreast 12 and some U.S. bourbons as well. So it's not like jumping straight into, you know, some really peaty, smoky scotch from one of the islands or something where people, I tried scotch once and it was horrible. It's like, wow, you know, you tried one type. So.
Yeah, and I think that's helping the renaissance in Irish whiskey is the style. It is more approachable.
Yes.
Your as you say, sweetness, that sweet character, which comes from the various components, comes from distillation, comes from the barrels, but it's definitely what gets a lot of people hooked. So
I'm certainly not shy of a peaty smoky scotch too. I often have a Laphroaig or something.
Okay.
Because
Oban or Oban is my favorite.
Dad's a fan of that one too. Yeah. I've had it on occasion, but there's something about the Laphroaig that just sits well with me.
Okay.
Again, it could be a sentimental thing. I've got some good memories over the years with that too.
Okay. So, you're here. You live here, and obviously, we're in Bend here in your studio.
Yep.
But you moved to Sisters.
Correct.
Smaller town to the northwest of us there.
Yeah.
But this is essentially home now, and has been for a number of years. So, I'm going to ask you to turn into the Deschutes County Tourism Board for a couple of minutes for us. So, favorite places to go for, you know, a good cocktail.
So if we briefly step outside of Central Oregon, I would say actually my favorite place in the state probably to go for a cocktail or just a good drink is a place called Huber's in Portland. I'm not sure if you've been there.
No,
but it's the oldest bar in Portland. Just incredible atmosphere, these beautiful big kind of vaulted curved ceilings and everything. Real characters working behind the bar and really good at what they do. So if I'm ever in Portland, Huber's is an absolute go-to. But around here in Central Oregon, you know, we've got the Still Whiskey Bar in downtown Bend. That's got a great selection. It's busy, it's popular. The tricky part can sometimes be just physically getting in there. It's often very busy, but Still's a great spot. There's a restaurant in Sisters called Chops, which is sort of a fine dining style restaurant, but they've got a couple of great bartenders out there. Fella Joe in particular is...
You're obviously a regular there?
We spend time there, Sisters is a small enough town that if you're, as we were chatting about off camera before, you know, the Irish are naturally chatty people, will kind of walk up to anybody and strike up a conversation. So you put a personality like ours in a small town like Sisters, most people know who you are after a few months.
Yeah, and folks who don't know Sisters, famed for its quilting. It's where the annual gathering of the quilters.
The big quilt show, yes, which is one of the more unique and slightly bizarre gatherings I've ever witnessed before. I had no idea there was such a cult behind quilting, but yeah, I mean, it's chaos to the point where a lot of people who live there, we get out of town when it's happening. We just say, you know, we'll leave them to it for the weekend because it's just tens of thousands of people are showing up. And some of these quilts are going for $5,000, $10,000+. I mean,
and Sisters is a population of, correct me if I'm wrong, like 5,000 to 8,000, something like that, is it?
You know, I'd be shocked if it's even that much. Sisters proper, I would guess is 3 to 4. Somebody's going to call me out in the comments on this, I'm sure.
But 10,000 visitors come in for this?
Yeah, I'd actually have to check exactly what visitor numbers are, but I mean, town turns into gridlock.
Wow.
You know, like to the point where I live about 2 miles outside of Sisters, just north of town. And the quickest way for me to get to Bend is to drive into Sisters and down. During the quilt show, I'll add 15 miles to my journey just to avoid trying to drive through that area, because it's bumper to bumper gridlock. Just
with the quilters.
Oh, the quilters, yeah. Yeah, they're a rare breed. So, and then on the other end of the spectrum, we're famous for the Sisters Rodeo as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Which is a whole different crowd.
I can imagine.
Yeah, the Sisters Rodeo is, it's an incredibly, especially as somebody who's not, I didn't grow up in the U.S. I didn't grow up in that environment, you know, so to go there and, you know, it's, I think it's 3 or 4 days, the actual rodeo, but it's basically for a whole week. Sisters just goes into a huge party for a whole week. Live music at every bar, late nights all over the place, locals nights going on. You've got all these rodeo cowboys and
cowgirls.
You know, cowgirls and terminology I learned this year, buckle bunnies.
Is that something that's in between a cowboy and a cowgirl? Is it?
They do, I think that's what they call the barrel racer girls. So they do that really incredible high speed on a horse, round the end of a barrel and back up. But that's my naive understanding of what that is.
You know, put on the Irish accent and you can get away with anything.
That's it. So, but yeah, Sisters is a great spot. I was 7 or so years in Bend, which has now got a population of over 100,000.
Yeah.
And even in the time I was here, it's just grown exponentially. I mean, as you guys come up here, you know why it's appealing. Amazing outdoor activities. Four seasons town. You got great skiing and snowboarding in the winter. Yeah. You've got every type of summer activity you could imagine. Lakes, rivers, mountains. More and more industry and business starting up here too.
No, definitely. One of the things I love about coming here, a number of things, but one of them is the support that it gives, kind of entrepreneurship, mentorship. There's definitely a can-do attitude in this part of the world, which I love. You know, you and I have our own businesses, so you know, I love seeing that it's very supportive. But back on the kind of the advice, kind of favorite places to go for a walk or a hike around here. It could be a long list.
It could be a long list. So yeah, it's interesting. It's getting a little tricky now. We're so popular, they've had to bring in a permit system here for some of the really busy hiking trails. So you actually have to pre-purchase a permit to be able to go, and it's limited on certain days. So some of my favorites can be hard to get onto now, but you know, one of the most famous ones is the Green Lakes Trail, which takes you so sort of west of Bend. You've got the Cascade Mountains, Mount Bachelor, the Sisters, everything like that. And the Green Lakes Trail is just an incredible incline trail that takes you up to these beautiful lakes at the base of the mountains and everything like that. Summiting South Sister, I did that in 2020. That was my first COVID project, was climb a mountain.
Okay.
And it was a good slog for me, because I mean, I keep active, but I'm not the most in shape guy out there. But you know, it's a good trail if you're prepared. It's achievable for anybody, and it's amazing. It's a little over 10,000 feet at the summit. So you get up there and you've just got these just mind-blowing 360-degree views, looking at other peaks, looking down at the lakes and everything. It's incredible. So, and then out in Sisters, there's a number out there I like as well. Tam MacArthur Rim is a beautiful one out there.
Okay.
It takes you up around Three Creeks Lake and things. And the Metolius River. I'm a big fly fisherman, have been a fly fisherman most of my adult life. And
that's
just a remarkable river.
So I'm sure folks back in Ireland will eventually, you know, both see and hear this, and they'll hear you talk about a 10,000-foot mountain, and they'll grimace, because I think Karen Toohill down in County Kerry, I think, weighs in it, and I'm sure I'll be corrected in the comments, but about 3,400 feet.
Mm-hmm.
We are here in Bend. We are
right
at 30.
Around that, yeah.
I think the center of Bend is measured at something like 38, 49, something like that.
Yeah.
So here we are, where we are sitting, and we are higher than any point on the island of Ireland.
Absolutely.
I always struggle when I come up here the first night. With just going from ground sea level up to here.
Yeah.
But here we are on the second night, and you know we're good.
You're in shape.
So, do you find when you go to sea level that you know because you're living at elevation that you're able to go longer, you have more stamina? Is that never really thought about
it? It's a good question, actually. In my younger years, I was much more aware of that sort of thing. I was incredibly active. I worked as an outdoor guide for over a decade all around the world at altitude to sea level, everything from kayaking to glacier climbing to rafting, fishing, I mean, you name it. And I certainly noticed back then that, yeah, I had more stamina, more. Nowadays, you know, I do most of my activity around here, and when I go to the coast, I'm on holiday. I'm not really working too hard when I'm out there.
Makes a lot of sense.
But so, I do love getting to the Oregon coast, though. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, we're like that, where we are living in a lovely place, but it's for us, it's an hour and a half drive out to the coast, and it's just, I think it kind of recharges the soul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, obviously, both of us being from relatively close to the coast in Dublin, I certainly know, although I loved, in my youth, hiking through the Wicklow Mountains and kayaking and canoeing down there. But getting out to the coast, in whether it's South Dublin or Wicklow, is always something to recharge the batteries.
Absolutely.
So we touched on the pandemic there a few minutes ago. When I got in touch with you, finally tracked you down online, and we chatted about various things. One of them was where we went to school. So you went to St. Columba's College. I went to Blackrock College.
Yeah.
They were big rivals in cross country and rugby. I know because, you know, you and I were not the biggest guys in the world.
No.
So I stopped rugby at 13, did cross country. We used to go out to St. Columba's every year. It was it was one of the most enjoyable but most horrific cross country races we would run. It was proper cross country.
It's a gnarly area out there. Yeah.
But you told me a great story about how when you were there, you actually, you got away from rugby and you got into golf.
Indeed, yes. So like most kids, you know, over there is rugby, a little bit of hockey, maybe some football, real football, that sort of a thing. And then, yeah, there was a golf course that actually, I can never remember if it was on the school property or it shared a border with it, but there, it was right there. I mean, it was walkable from the dorm rooms, and there was an agreement that students could play the course for free. So for various reasons, you know, stepping away from sports that I wasn't really built for, I picked up a golf club, started playing golf, and got really, really into it. Myself and a small group of buddies all started playing together. I actually ended up starting the first golf team for St. Columbus, and my last year there was when that was going on, and started playing against some of the other schools around and things like that, and I developed an absolute passion for it. But, I mean, to be honest, one of the contributing factors is we realized, my friends and I, that golf was the only unsupervised sport. So while everyone else was playing football and rugby and things with teachers, we'd be on the golf course. Not that we were getting up to too much mischief, but you know, it was, when you're in boarding school, you live there, you sleep there, you eat there, you go to class there, you never get a break. So any opportunity to feel like you have some freedom,
bit of freedom,
some control. So that was kind of the contributing factor, but yeah, we all got really into it. And yeah.
And then obviously you've talked about all your travels. You can't cart golf clubs around that with you.
No.
But like a lot of people, you came back to golf in the pandemic.
Yeah, thank you, COVID.
And, you know, and there's definitely some silver linings for all of us.
Yeah.
And here, you know, this on top of being a great beer town, a decent food town, an incredible place for outdoors, this is a great place for golf.
Phenomenal golf area. Just huge amount of courses for every budget and skill level. I mean, you can play everything from, you know, when I first started playing again when COVID hit, the old back nine, which is just on the south side of Bend. At the time, I think it was $22 for a round of nine, and I had the first tee slot, you know, every time I went out, first tee slot in the morning. And then once I kind of realized, like, okay, I haven't completely lost my game, like I can show my face in public, I started playing some other courses again. And now that I live in Sisters, I just actually in the last 2 weeks have played twice out there at a course called Aspen Lakes.
Okay.
phenomenal course as well. Beautiful, long. Oh my gosh, I walked it the first time and I regretted it. Knackered by the end of it. Absolutely. And I only walked 9, but it was 9 long, long holes. But it's a unique one too. You've got this red lava rock around here.
Yeah.
Cinder rock. And in the winter, we don't salt the roads here. Even though we get a lot of snow and ice, they just throw that cinder rock on it. Aspen uses that in their bunkers. So it's not white sand bunkers, it's this finely dusted up red cinder. So it's a really unique, I mean, you've got, the greens of the fairway and the green and the rough and everything, and then these kind of volcanic red bunkers. And
fascinating.
Yeah, fascinating. Not great for the underside of your club.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Yeah.
And folks won't know, but weather has changed here this week, last week, before
big
we travelled up, when you and I spoke. We were looking at up here, it was mid to high 70s or so, and we're definitely a little cooler than that. So we didn't pack our clubs this week. But I look forward to perhaps in the spring or early summer when we're up again, we'll connect on, I don't know if you're an evening golfer or a weekend golfer, but we'll definitely get 9 holes in. And
one of the beauties of self-employment is you have some control over your schedule.
Don't give away our secrets. So also when we spoke, Toby, you and I both share a love of Red Best 12. It's my favorite. We always have a bottle of it in the house. But over the last number of months, I've slowly grown my... I hate the word collection because I don't collect whiskey. I buy it to drink and share it.
Yeah.
So we've got a number of them at home. But one of them I picked up was the cast strength.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you and I talked about this on the phone.
Yes.
I said I was going to bring up a little treat for you, and this is it. We'll pour some in here. I haven't had any of it yet. Weighs in at 56.3 alcohol, so 112 proof.
So this will be your first time ever with that.
Exciting. So, I've pulled the top on it, but still filled.
Yeah.
As I said, love sharing whiskey, and I wanted to share it with somebody who loves Redbreast.
Yeah.
So let's pour a little drop of this.
Absolutely.
We may put a little bit of I'm going to just put a smaller amount in there. It's been interesting to watch Redbreast expand. I jokingly, with some people call it the nest. Robin Redbreast is the nest is getting bigger.
Yep.
It's obviously a successful brand now here in the States. So there it is at cask strength.
Thank
you. You're welcome. So, Sláinte again.
It's immediately very different on the nose.
Yeah, obviously we've just poured it, so to me it's not as evidently sweet.
That was the first thing, not nearly as sweet coming straight off there, but
it's
got a little bit more of, I don't know, it's a long shot, but more of a kind of a green apple-y kind of nose or something to it. Yeah,
which I know we talked about green spot on the phone as well. There's green apple always comes through on, so that's kind of that's a classic pot still character, that the apple and occasionally it goes over into pear as well. So, it's not often I put myself or someone else on the spot by literally opening it for the first time while we're recording, but what the hell?
There's something else on there and I cannot put my finger on it. But
big mouthful of spice for me.
That's a lot hotter, That one caught me off guard, actually.
We're stepping it up a few percent. So let's
butterscotch. See, it's definitely not nearly as sweet on the finish, is it?
Let me, if you want, I'm gonna just pour a few drops in there.
Yeah.
There you go.
See, and that's again what I love about the 12. You don't get that initial
hit.
Exactly.
What's interesting about
that brings out the sweetness more now.
Agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just those few little drops. So you're still drinking it at decent proof. What I love about cask strength whiskies is it gives the consumer the choice as to where they want it.
Yeah.
So if they want it diluted down a little, so it's in the mid-40s or lower than that, they can. But it can be too much for...
Yeah. I mean, initial instincts are telling me just as to sit down and have a glass, I would still reach for the 12 first myself. But this might grow on me. I need to give it a minute. It actually, again, it's, we keep mentioning green spot. There's, I get little kind of hints of green spot off it in some ways as well. But
it's interesting. Back in 2019, my folks came out for Christmas and they asked, they were coming through duty free in Dublin. And I asked, could they pick up a bottle of Redbreast 15? I don't think we could get it here at the time. So they brought it. All excited to open it up, and we opened it up and went, that's different from Redbreast 12. And I think, I don't know if our palate had become conditioned to that. I've had it since, and I definitely enjoy it more, but it's a different whiskey to me. So, so I think we might... stop recording and we'll just keep sipping on this and see how it goes. So one last thing before we wrap up. When we chatted, you told me a great story about your dad, your dad, whiskey, and some music back in the day. And I think we should put that on record.
Okay, yeah, that ties back to my first ever experience with whiskey. And from memory, I was 14 years old. My dad is a very responsible person. He does not feed alcohol to minors. This was very much a father-son bonding experience. But yeah, I was about 14 years old. My dad had a little home office and he had, you know, the leather chair with the receipt of buttons and everything in it, you know, and it was always this kind of mythical place as a child, you know, what's that room dad always goes into that we're not really supposed to be in? And he called me in there one day, closed the door and walked over and pulled out a bottle of Jameson. Good old off-the-shelf regular Jameson, and he poured me a little glass of it, and he took me over to the armchair in the corner, and he said, sit there, hold that, don't do anything yet. So, oh yes, Dad. And he walked over, and he had the old, you know, this was long enough ago that it was the old hi-fi system, you know, with the CD changer and everything, and he walked over, and he was messing with that, and he teed up a song, which I had never heard and never even heard of the band at the time, but he got it all ready and he turned to me and said, right, sit there, drink that, listen to this, I'll be back in a minute. And he hit play and walked out and it was Money by Pink Floyd.
Okay.
And he had it turned way up, which was interesting because he's a fairly conservative guy. He's not a big noisemaker or anything. And I, yeah, sat there in that armchair, sipping on my first ever whiskey, which was Jameson, listening to my first ever Pink Floyd song, which was Money. And that experience will stay with me for the rest of my life. And it was an interesting one because my dad, again, he's a very loving man. He's a great father, but he was always, you know, he's of that generation where he's a little bit more reserved and, you know, doesn't really wear his emotions on his sleeve. So I remember thinking, like, what's wrong with Dad? Yeah. Why is he doing that? And, you know, and I look back now and I realize that that was just, I think for him, more so than me, an important bonding opportunity to share a couple of his favorite things with me.
With you.
Yeah. And here I am now, you know, whiskey is a shared passion of my dad. And every time we go home, I'm bringing a bottle or he's got a bottle and he's got something he's held for me. And, you know, when I was working at Deschutes, we would do all those barrel-aged beers. Yeah, with these really rare, you know, low-quantity beers, that have been aged in bourbon or aged in this, that, and the rest. And I was constantly sending them home from my dad and my brother. And, you know, he's still hanging on to some of those. So when I come home, because he knows that, you know, that's something we can share together and bond over and things
like
that.
Which is great. To me, that's as we get older and, you know, having been through what we've been through, I certainly know from my point of view, I value some things more now, and family and friends has really come to the top of my list in that. Not that I didn't before, but it's become even more important. And to have something like that, to have it be, you know, a dram or two or three or whatever it is. And the nice thing is we have Irish whiskies that are often only available here in the US.
Yep.
So you can bring back home, and then there are many distilleries doing, you know, Ireland only or duty free only whiskies there. So there isn't, it's not like it's all the same stuff. You can be sharing different whiskies, which is fantastic.
Exactly.
So, right, with that, we'll keep chatting.
We'll keep
chatting. We'll stop recording, and we've obviously got some nice whiskey to finish. So I'll say, Sláinte, thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you so much for including me and tracking me down after all these years. This is impressive detective work.
Well, you know, Google helps.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and Google Irishman in Central Oregon. There's not many results that popped up.
And you having such a wonderful website, which we'll share in the video. You do some lovely work.
Thank you very much.
I say that genuinely. As somebody who works in the digital marketing space, it was fascinating. I thought the most important, not the most important, but the most interesting one was a lot of your food shots.
Oh, yeah.
In my opinion, some of the hardest photography to do.
It can be a challenge.
You've got some beautiful ones on there, which we'll share out. Yeah. So with that, thanks again, and
we will
see you next time, to everybody.
Sláinte.
Sláinte, thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode. You'll find more episodes wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll find the My Favorite Irish video series at irishwhiskeylad.com. That's Irish whiskey with an E, LAD.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, I'd appreciate it if you could take a couple of minutes to leave a review or a rating at your favorite podcast platform. Until next time, Sláinte.